The Guardian.
Welcome to Politics Weekly Extra. I'm Jonathan Friedland. This week, the news moves once again to one of its favourite topics in America, namely Donald Trump. That's because there is the big tribal gathering of the Republican right. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is meeting in Florida, and the star guest, so we are told, is going to be none other than the former president. The talk is that he's going to anoint himself at that conference as the nominee for 2024, almost putting a marker down, daring anyone else to challenge him. A lot of Republicans, I'm sure, will step forward and say that's great, but there will be a group who will say no way, that this is not what they want and that this is cannot be the future for the Republican Party. That group of dissident, disaffected Republicans took some form earlier this month when word emerged of a Zoom call featuring a whole lot of disenchanted, disaffected, anti-Trump Republicans. And the convener of that group was a man called Evan McMullen. Significance of him is that he ran for president against Trump, in effect, in 2016 as an independent conservative. He made quite a few waves back in 2016, partly because he did very well in his home state of Utah, getting 25% of the vote, which was, by the standards of most third-party candidates, really high. He did well there, partly because he's from Utah. He's a Mormon, like a lot of the state's population and elected representatives. And in a way, you could have thought that was that he would be an interesting footnote to the 2016 campaign. But he's back in the news, partly because earlier in February, he convened on Zoom a group of disaffected, disenchanted Republicans to talk about next moves, where now. And then that word of that meeting leaked, and there was a lot of talk about perhaps a new party for those disaffected, anti-Trump Republicans. I've been wanting for a while, certainly since that Zoom meeting came to light, to talk to Evan McMullen. And so we did that. And I began by asking him about his own backstory, because one of the intriguing things about Evan McMullen, besides the fact that he worked on Capitol Hill for a lot of senior Republicans, is that he was, in a previous life, an officer of the Central Intelligence Agency.
My experience, it's a big organization, just like the U.S. military, it does various things, but my experience was working against terrorist organizations that wanted to destroy Western democracy, not only American democracy, but Western democracy, and also working against foreign dictators who abused their people and also challenged freedom in the West. And I became very familiar with the danger of these regimes and understood on a deep level, fairly deep level, how they operated, why they did certain things, and how to counter them. And so when I saw Donald Trump rising through the Republican primaries in 2016, that, among other reasons, personal reasons, some of that having to do with my faith and other issues, led me to understand the danger that he posed. And that's how someone like me ends up, you know, jumping into the pro-democracy, the work of defending and promoting American and other democracies, because I understood the authoritarian threat that had arrived on our shores.
I mean, and we'll get to the phone call, the Zoom call in a minute, but since you've mentioned your faith there, it interests me that, you know, you did have this bid for the presidency as an independent conservative in 2016. You polled 25%, quite a decent share in your home state of Utah. It strikes me that Mitt Romney also was a very early critic of Donald Trump, that he was somehow offended by Trump. Is there something about Mormons and Mormonism that found themselves and found itself particularly antithetical to Donald Trump?
I think there is, and it's a fair question. We ran a very brief campaign. Many of your listeners may not be aware of that, but our campaign was only 3 months long. Seemed a lot longer, but it was only 3 months. You know, I was an unknown on the American political scene. I had been a senior staffer on Capitol Hill in the House of Representatives working with Republicans. And so we had none of the things you need to run a real credible presidential campaign with potential. It was an emergency campaign. We hoped somebody else would do what I did. And only when no one stepped forward to do it, did I agree to do it myself. But to your question, look, you know, part of our history in my faith in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is one of persecution. Our early members were persecuted by government-backed violent mobs and run out of towns, and people were, you know, killed. And that's a history that is still very close to us and our psyches and our understandings of ourselves and our country. The other thing I would say is that we can empathize also with other minorities who are attacked by a demagogue. I mean, it's a big issue. So when, you know, Donald Trump started attacking minorities or women or members of certain faiths, to us, you know, to many of us, red flags went up immediately.
So tell us about that Zoom call, who was on it, and what the purpose of it was.
Right. So, you know, it was a gathering that was meant to be private. It was a very beginning step in gathering most of the leading principled Republican political and intellectual leaders in our country, most of them very well known inside America and some of them outside of America. We intended to hear their views on what needed to happen. Did we need to create something new in response to the last 4 or 5 years and the violent insurrection on January 6th? And so we had that discussion, and of course it became public, and now that private discussion, although it continues also in private as well, it is also spilled out into the public sphere, and maybe that's the way it should be. You know, we continue to consider whether we should create something new, either a faction or an alliance inside the Republican Party, or perhaps one that operates more independently of the Republican Party. Or should we start a new party altogether, or is it something in between?
And you did have some big hitters there, former officials from the two Bush administrations, from the Reagan administration, people who'd been elected, even some former officials from the Trump administration. So these were sort of dissident Republicans appalled by the Trump presidency and particularly by the attempted insurrection on January the 6th. Just give us a sense of the arguments, as it were, for the two approaches that you've mentioned there. What is those who were making the case for forming a new party? What was the case they made?
Well, we did a straw poll near the end of the discussion, and we asked our participants a range of questions, but one of them was, should we create a new party or a new faction? And if a new faction, should it be inside the Republican Party strictly, or should it operate more independently? And 40% thought we should start a new party, that should be the next step. 43% thought that we should start with a faction. But to answer your question about those who argued for a new party, the basic argument is that the Republican Party, as they say, can't be reformed anytime soon. And we're simply not wanted inside the Republican Party in any case. And meanwhile, the health of the Republic is at stake. As long as we remain a two-party system, or even if it were a three-party system with three major parties or two major parties as it is now, we can't tolerate one of those parties being an anti-democracy party. And that's the Republican Party collectively is moving in that direction if it hasn't simply become that. And that's their argument.
And set against them were those people who felt, look, the battle is not yet lost. Stay and fight. Do it from within. Because in a two-party system, it's just historically been a dead end to try and form a third party. Better to fight for the Republican Party and win from within. Is that broadly a summary of what they were arguing?
Yes. I mean, look, I mean, we have had third parties before. The Republican Party is itself, once was a third party, and it's, you could say it's the most successful, quote unquote, third party in American history. Since then, it's been very difficult for third parties. We do have a very entrenched two-party system, which I would like to change, by the way. But for now, that entrenched system gives any party that really goes off the reservation and becomes a danger to the country, it gives any such party a chance to recover, because these two major parties that we have, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, they don't face existential threats, and which, by the way, leads to, enables extremism in both parties, if you ask me. Whereas if we were in a European parliamentary system and say there were multiple parties and parties faced the threat of complete defeat, that would create a scenario, I think, where we could probably more easily start a third party that would replace the Republican Party, but also B, the Republican Party would have more of an incentive not to go down the path it is currently going down.
Will all senators now rise and raise their right hand? Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald John Trump, former President of the United States, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God?
The question, in a way, that comes to mind, given everything that's happened just in 2021, particularly with the events of January the 6th and the attempted insurrection, is why hasn't the split inside the Republican Party already happened? I mean, this is a fascinating debate you're having about now, tactically, whether you're better outside or inside, but how come the Trump presidency, which, you know, listeners to this podcast will know, rode roughshod really over the Constitution, over democratic norms, but even if you put that to one side, the actual attempted insurrection, a huge number, overwhelming number of Republicans voted to both oppose the certification of Joe Biden's election, but also to oppose his Donald Trump's impeachment. And then over in the Senate, just 7 Republican senators were so appalled by what he'd done that they voted to convict him of those charges. I'm just thinking, if even those events, which happened right under their noses in their workplace, didn't appall Republicans enough to break then in a way, isn't this kind of a lost cause? If it's not happened already, it's not going to happen.
Of course, these things don't happen overnight. As much as someone like me might want them to, the reality is that not everyone approaches these issues and these events in the same way. And there's persuasion that needs to happen over time. And it's a fight. It's not easy, but that's just the way it is. Now, why this split doesn't happen also, you have those of us who desire a new direction for the party. Some of us think that, look, this is our party and we're not going to just give it up to an anti-democracy movement that has taken it over. We're not, as long as this is a two-party system, this is our party. We're not giving it to you. And even if we're in the minority, we're going to continue to fight for it. On their part, they're thinking, we control this party now. You don't. It's our party. So why should we leave? So I think both sides are looking at each other in that way. But I think the other important thing to recognize, again, is that we're a two-party system. And I think if we were a multi-party system, I don't think this dynamic would exist. I think you would have seen a break already of them or of us, and then we would just compete directly on equal footing and off we would go. It's less about sort of, for some of us, a religious or, deep tribal connection to any party and not to the Republican Party. It's more just a recognition of, right now, we're a two-party system. The Republican Party is a vehicle that is important for leadership in the country, as the Democratic Party is, and it's controlled by one group at one time, and hopefully by another group in another year, another month, and we're fighting for control of this particular vehicle, at least for now.
Yeah. So that says to me that in the argument, Devin McMullen, that was going on within that Zoom call, you're of in the camp that says stay within and fight for the ownership of the Republican Party rather than, decamping and starting a whole new venture.
I think I'm more persuaded by the idea that it's not an either or question, given the way our system works. I think you could envision a national faction, for example, that has its own brand and its own principles, its own policy positions, that supports good Republicans through elections, and that challenges and works to defeat those who are on the anti-democracy side of the party, a faction that supports also viable independent candidates, and even, you know, Democrats if they're challenged by Republican extremists in general elections. But in certain states where the Republican Party has become so extreme that it's become effectively a third party, meaning that the Democrats and then the unaffiliated voter class are both larger than registered Republicans. In those states, and in states where it's easy, relatively easy to establish a new party, and where the electoral systems create permissive electoral environments for a third party, it may make sense for us to organize in those places as an actual new party, even though we may not do that in every state. We may nationally be a faction, but organized under the same brand more formally, again, as a party in certain states where it makes sense.
If the vast majority of Republican voters felt the way you do, that they were repelled by what Donald Trump represented, then they would simply demand that the people who represent them in the House or in the Senate or at governor level change course. The problem, surely, is that they are not appalled and not repelled by what they've seen. And therefore, those, you know, 43 Republican senators who backed Donald Trump, refused to convict him, Mitch McConnell, all the rest of them, they're basically taking their lead from, you know, 75 million Americans who, despite everything they'd seen, still voted for Donald Trump. Doesn't that mean that is the big problem here? That basically they're okay with the way Donald Trump behaved?
It's not exactly that those people who are still supportive of Donald Trump's role in the party are on board with that kind of activity. I think many are, and I'll come to that in a second. But the other thing to understand is that Republicans are being overwhelmed with disinformation. Their political information space is an alternative reality that they've relied on for decades, and now more than ever, I would say in the past as well, but now more than ever, it is a sea of lies. And that is a serious challenge that we face. I think, you know, if people, we need to bring people out of that disinformation bubble, help them understand truth and reality. And then I think many more would share a closer view of things to the one that I have, and that those who my colleagues, those who I work with have. But I will acknowledge also that there is a segment, I think, of Republicans that I think believes that the country should be guided by a certain faith tradition, by, frankly, Christianity, that in some, I think there's a racial undertone to that, you know, about, you know, whiteness. They believe that that is so critical to the identity of the country, and they see the country changing in such a way that they think threatens the identity of the America they've understood. And they think it's more important to defend that kind of America than it is to defend an America driven by our values and committed to a democratic republic as a system of self-government. That's the most difficult segment, I think, for us to reach, and the most work needs to be done there.
Just on that point about sea of lies and the alternative information universe, a lot of the people who continue to support Donald Trump inhabit, would your efforts be better directed, Evan McMullen, if you didn't form a political faction or party, but actually set about a new, you know, TV network to oppose Newsmax and the One America News Network and Fox, which do live in a way in that alternative information bubble, rather than forming a new political group? Maybe you need to get on the air or have a news website that speaks to those conservatives with facts rather than lies.
I think one challenge is that that would very much be developmental work. And what I mean by that is that I don't think the audience is there right now to create, frankly, the profit incentive for traditional investors in something like that. So you would really need to find a group of philanthropists who were committed to, who saw the problem for what it is and committed to investing in such an enterprise for the good of the country. And I think they perhaps exist out there, but certainly that I think that's an idea that has a lot of validity.
Now, this week, Donald Trump is reported to be planning to address CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, when it meets in Florida to declare that he is the Republicans' presumptive nominee for 2024, almost like a Shakespearean king putting the crown on his own head. But that's his plan. If he goes ahead and says that, and indeed if he does continue to be the de facto leader of the Republican Party, do you think then that puts the onus on you and your colleagues to have your own, in effect, conservative, independent conservative, anti-Trump nominee in place to run against him in 2024?
Not necessarily. I think if the Republicans nominate Donald Trump again, which I hope they don't, because I think there are other better leaders for the party and for the country, you know, in a 2-year period, Donald Trump lost the House of Representatives twice. His party lost the House of Representatives twice, the Senate once, and the White House. I mean, it's a remarkable track record of electoral loss in a brief period of time.
You're going to get tired of winning, he said. Do you remember that?
Right, exactly. And he's convinced a lot of people that somehow they still, in all of those losses, have been winning, even though they don't control, you know, any part of the two major branches, political branches of our federal government. And I think those of us who are working on some of the things that we've been discussing, we will ensure that that loss happens once again. I think we would hope to see a unifying Democratic candidate. And we had that in the last cycle in Joe Biden. And obviously we have policy differences with him, but he was somebody who was committed to preserving the Republic and ran a unifying campaign, even when it was difficult to do. At the presidential level, I think the most likely scenario is that if the Republicans nominate Trump again, we will work to help the Democrats nominate a unifying figure, whether it's Joe Biden or, you know, if he decides it's not him, then, you know, then whoever it is.
See, I can really follow that logic, especially if it is Joe Biden, because, as you say, principled conservatives, as you would describe yourself, found it easy to fall in behind Joe Biden. But he'll be 82 then. I'm just thinking, anybody else? Tell me who among Democrats you could imagine people, self-described principled conservatives, Republicans, could fall in behind on the Democratic side apart from Biden. Surely that was what made him almost a unique figure.
It did make him a unique figure, but I would add that there are many Democrats who are capable of unifying the country. And look, I would encourage them as a part of the cross-partisan democracy coalition in America to continue to lead in a unifying way. And I think those of us who are disaffected Republicans, we acknowledge that, you know, we don't really have great representation in the government right now. We have people like Mitt Romney and Adam Kinzinger in the House and others who represent us. But, you know, we're a modest faction now and we have modest representation. So we understand that if it takes another unifying Democrat to beat again, an anti-democracy movement and candidate from the Republican side, that we, you know, we again won't be perfectly represented in the White House, but at least we will preserve the Republic. And that's what I think Republicans who don't yet understand us need to understand, and that is that we are committed first to the preservation of self-governance in America and to the continued commitment to our founding values, namely that we are all created equal and free, and that we will put that above all else.
Evan McMullen, Executive Director of Stand Up Republic, thanks so much for joining me for such an interesting conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all from me for this week. Next week, as I take the odd week off here and there, you're in for a treat as my colleague Raphael Baer steps in behind the mic. So do make sure to listen into that. As always, I suggest you also listen back to Wednesday's episode of Politics Weekly, where Jessica Elgott breaks down the latest lockdown exit roadmap for England and looks ahead to next week's budget. And for anyone who hasn't yet heard it, our sister podcast, Today in Focus, produced a fantastic five-part mini-series about the Freshwater Five, a group sentenced to, collectively, 104 years in jail for a crime they say they didn't commit. It's a genuine thriller, so make sure to listen. But for now, it's goodbye. The producer is Danielle Stevens. I'm Jonathan Friedland. Please stay safe, and thanks, as always, for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.